Well, thank you. Thanks, William, for asking. First, I'll just say this may be a rather frayed Zen thread or something. And the threads may be very loose and frayed by the time I get through whatever. We'll see how it goes. I have a very sore throat. I'm not feeling I've been sick. So maybe that's good. Maybe I won't prattle on quite too long. I'll see how that kind of goes. But I do feel better. Thanks, William, for your email, and also Kelly and Sarah. And Sarah, I made a fresh batch of ginger tea, so thank you.
Good for what ails you.
Yeah. I'm going to start. This has been an interesting week for me because week before Thanksgiving break, and we were at the point where this, some of you know, I think most of you, but some of you know, I teach high school. I teach theology in a Catholic high school. I teach world religions, which is interesting. And so we were studying Zen this week. You know, we had done Hinduism and Buddhism and Confucianism, Taoism. We're behind. So normally this would have been about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Anyway, it was this week. And so I've been trying to talk simply about Zen all week, which is interesting. And get students engaged a little online, and they're very much not engaged online, and I get that. You know, usually I have them in class, and we have discussions, and it's kind of nice. So I have no idea what they got, but I'm in the process of getting in 62 Zen essays that I will get to spend my Thanksgiving week for my pleasure reading. So there we go. And last night I got like, I think, 9 different emails going, I'm behind. I'm stressed. Can I turn this in like later? It's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Just and thank you, Sarah, for the email with the talk last night. I sat and listened to that last night. It was nice. Thank you. One of my things for this essay that the kids write is that we do just some reflection. I try to get them to think about what Zen says, and the textbook's really kind of simple, but just to kind of reflect a little bit. But there's a quote I use from Thomas Merton, who was kind of an inspiration, kind of a mentor for me, in a very indirect way. But he talks about, he and Suzuki are having a discussion in the book, Zens and the Birds of Appetite. And there's a place in there where he makes a comment. He's talking about Buddhism being very experiential and Catholicism not being, and all the stuff and the theology. And of course, my students are all very used to that because they get all that stuff crammed at them. And part of the essay is for them to stop for a minute and think about, Merton makes a comment that the heart of Catholicism is the living experience of Christ. And he talks about experiential understanding. And so I try to get them to think about that in terms of this. And we'll see how that kind of goes. And for me, that's always been a big part, and I think an attraction for what's going on here. When I first started, I was thinking about several things this past couple of weeks. You know, the last 6 months, 9 months, actually probably since Christmas, has been a real interesting time. It's been a real interesting personal time, struggle. School has been a struggle. Everything is kind of, we're kind of caught in this. I kind of believe COVID is exposing all the flaws, cracks, and weaknesses in a lot of stuff. At least it's my experience from an institutional, from being in an institution and dealing with things and kind of working through that. You know, there's lots of fraying, and it seems to be the case. When I first came in 2017, it was like summer, fall, to the Saturday morning Zen sessions. I didn't start my little timer, so I don't rattle on. Do that. You know, I really probably had kind of an agenda. I remember talking to Sarah and saying, look, I'm a Catholic school teacher. I'm coming because, A, I do meditation. I've been meditating since 1988 myself. And so I wanted to do some expanding on my own personal meditation and my own growth. And I also was very interested in this whole kind of Zen Christian deal, coming out of Merton, coming out of other people. And when I remember talking to Sarah the first time and saying, you know, I don't want to cross any boundaries. I don't want to violate any traditions. She was very welcoming and very open, and it was great. And it kind of opened up this space. You know, I had, and I know that I had this agenda to kind of find out things and build this knowledge and settle this deal. And I was also at the place where I was about to start. I had applied to this thing called the Living School, which is, for those of you who may be aware, Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr, is a Franciscan priest. He's a mentor of mine. He has a place at Albuquerque called the Center for Action and Contemplation, where they focus a lot on contemplative spirituality and then how to live that in the world. You know, and he's doing a lot of really good work, especially with a lot of like younger people and kind of getting them engaged in a serious sense here. People who are walking away from institutions. And they have a thing called the Living School. And that Living School is a thing about the depths of kind of Christian mysticism, but it's also pretty expansive and very open. It has lots of other things coming into it. And so not everyone there's. Most of them are Catholic. A lot of them aren't even Christian. And so it's a very open kind of dialogue. Well, I applied. And so this was all coming together. And there was a lot of personal stuff happening at the time as well. So there were these various agendas that I knew were kind of there for coming to do Zen. As well as just, you know, I think what I found, especially early on, is while that 2 hours on Saturday morning at Colorado College was just really nice to just go there, you know, and walk in and just like let everything else go away. It was kind of a neat thing. You know, the Living School thing worked pretty well for a while. I mean, it did actually. I kind of came to this since the last year of it. It started in 2018, it ended this summer. It ended fairly, not quite as engaging as I had hoped. But then that's life. And part of that was the whole COVID thing, I think, as well. Part of it was also how they kind of run things is there's like 200 something people per cohort at a time, different schools, you know, and they're international. And one of the things they do, it's a lot of online work. And then you meet together four times over the 2 years and you do a lot of stuff. And how they handle that is they create these small groups and you are supposed to be in dialogue with your individual cohort small group. And you do online discussions and readings and stuff and back and forth. Well, my small group didn't really gel well. You know, there were seven of us. They kind of divided them up by time zones because that way you can kind of all be, you can all have meetings kind of close at the same time. Four of the seven of us kind of did, the rest didn't. So by the end of last year, I was really disappointed a little bit and I was finding myself less engaged. And there were two things that changed that. One was a section in the school curriculum on Buddhism that brought in, we read Thich Nhat Hanh's kind of definitive work on Buddhism. I can't think of the name of it now. Sarah, you and I talked about this at one point. It was a very long kind of detailed work and I enjoyed that. And also there was another teacher, this guy named Jim Finley, who was actually, Thomas Merton was his spiritual advisor, spiritual director. And he was a monk back at Gethsemane in the mid 60s, and Thomas Merton was his spiritual director. So he brought a lot of that direct engagement. And when he left the monastery, he studied Buddhism, and he brought a lot of that direct engagement. And he got a great session, and that really kind of energized me. And I was like, oh. And in the Christmas time, I kind of found myself, okay, I'm focused. And then I also know that. In the next couple of months, as I was thinking about whether or not I was going to finish or drop out, I came to realize that the community that I wanted to find with the Living School people, I found here. So I had that. And there was no need to quit the school. Just finish it. You know, and so I didn't have to be resentful. I was able to kind of let go of the resentment and the little pickings about the people and just like, good, bad. I mean, and maybe it all comes together, whatever. This all seems like, you know, I'm really good at mixing things together. A lot of people sometimes criticize me for that, but I tend to mix all these things and then I'm kind of living in it. And a lot of people are saying, well, you should do this or you should do that or you should do this. You have to separate them. And I'm going, I don't think so. Anyhow. And that kind of gave me a chance to kind of get through. And then when we went on the whole online thing and our symposium was online, the whole thing kind of lost. The last really 6 months have been really an interesting personal dive. I was thinking about William's talk last week. When I was thinking about it anyway, and when you called me or you emailed me, William, the first thought that popped into my mind was that I could talk about hopelessness. But I do that so well that I really didn't want to go there. But I was thinking a lot about my own sense of failure. You know, I get wrapped up in that sometimes. One of the things that I also know that I kind of end up in this interesting little dichotomy. Sometimes I almost feel very schizophrenic, you know, that I'm kind of like all these little things. Sarah's been really good at helping me see that I like to like grab some label and go, well, this is what I am. And it's like, well, that's partly what you are, but that's not completely what you are. And it's like, oh, okay. So that's been another good thing to kind of learn over the time. The guy last night in his talk made the same comment, and it reminded me of that, Sarah, from some of our conversations, that I can very easily slip into that, oh, well, here's what I am, and this is how this is, and this is how this is going to be. And it's like, well, maybe, you know. There was a point as the summer and fall moved on, and you know, I'm aware that I am very focused on the Saturday morning thing, and I love coming on Saturday morning. And really, it has become this particular time frame has become, I don't know, just such a an embedded part of my life for the last 3 years that it just now seems to be, well, that. And I know that I don't always engage in everything else and other stuff. I kind of pick a little bit here and there. When the precept discussions came up, I was real excited about that. And so I went to the precept class and even thought about, at the beginning of that was the idea maybe of doing the vows and the thing and kind of being more connected. And part of me kind of moved in and out of that in my own self. And then there was also circumstances that kind of kicked in. One of the things, and I maybe mentioned this, I don't know, I ended up in a conflict at work over my administration decided they were going to furlough me because they decided we were going to all go back to school together, bring all the kids in. And their teachers were like, well, we're not necessarily wanting that. And several of us, so seven or nine people said, no, we're not happy about that. And four of us said, if you do that, we're going to teach from home because you had said we could do that. Well, then they realized they don't have the personnel to make that happen. And you know, my principal walks down and says, well, if you teach from home, they're going to furlough it. And it turned into a real mess. But it also triggered off a whole lot of fear and anxiety about the things that are outside of my daily world and control. And a lot of that was economic, and a lot of it was stuff, and a lot of, and it's triggered off a lot of things that I've been kind of not wallowing, but concerned about and focused on. And so I ended up not, and for several reasons, kind of pursuing on that and kind of staying kind of where I am. One of the things I think, as I began to kind of move through the last 7-9 months with us as a group, as a community, I really kind of found this holding that space for me a lot, was kind of letting go of the agenda. Kind of just trying to come to a place of letting go of this agenda that I had to figure this out, make this work, put this together, fix this part, explain this deal, and all of that stuff that partly I kind of like because I get wrapped up in, you know, and part of that's just an academic, and I kind of just, yeah, I get in there. I remember two things that came out of last spring that really stopped me. One of my agendas has always been to be right, quite honestly. You know, I've spent a lot of time and effort being right and being very smart about it. I remember, yeah, there's a line. I used this once in my class and with some kids. It's, would you rather be right or compassionate? You know, and so that's an interesting way to talk. And I'm always like, well, I'd rather be right, quite frankly. that poem, Sarah, that you sent us, and I don't have, I couldn't find it last night, but that that line, the place where I am right, flowers will not grow. And I kind of realized, while I have built a life where flowers will not grow, do I really want that to be the rest of my life? Do I really want to spend the rest of my life defending this place that flowers will not grow? And it kind of hit me. It's like, well, maybe not. I don't know. So I've kind of let that one settle, you know? And then there's always been that, you know, that gap between what I want, what is, what's there, you know, what you get, what you want, the struggles and the push. And there was the other one, the other poem that, and I really like this, and I've used this one several times, you know, whatever happens, whatever what is what I want. I remember we were using that for one of the koan sessions last spring, and I may have said something at the time, but I definitely just remember very specifically, I'm in my backyard and I'm doing Tai Chi and I'm thinking about that. And it's just like, that's it. Just whatever is, can you just stop fighting whatever's not and just be okay with whatever is? And that's difficult for me. It's very difficult for me. Okay, there's my 12 minutes. I'll stop in a minute. Most of you can remember this. William, you can get this in history. You may remember it too. Or you may know it. You know, remember the old bumper stickers, love it or leave it? You know, I had one that said change it or lose it. So I grew up from a young age with this whole attitude of you don't accept, you change, you push, you fight. You know, you never give in. You know, especially when you're right. There you go. And I'm sure I've mellowed on that a little bit, but I'm very well aware that that's just such a core deal of how I've built my life. All right. And bringing that all to this, I think that a lot of what has evolved for me sitting here on Saturday mornings, sharing space and time with you folks, is not, maybe it is the permission, the willingness, the ability, the okayness to let some of that go. I was reading for prayer. I did prayer. So I was reading part of the different readings from different things. So I'll close with this. This is from the Way of Zhang Des in the Taoist. I'm also aware of this too. There's a great line of the Tao Te Ching that says, he who speaks does not know, he who knows does not speak. So I obviously don't know nearly as much as I think I did, because I really like to prattle on. But there's this reading on the Man of Tao. And I read this for prayer for my class. And as I read it, I just thought, oh my God, this is not you. When you read this, do you realize how much of what you normally do stands in opposition to this? And the bottom part, you know, the man in whom Tao acts without impediment does not bother with his own interests, does not despise others who do. He does not struggle to make money and does not make a virtue of poverty. He goes his way without relying on others and does not pride himself on walking alone. While he does not follow the crowd, he won't complain of those who do. Rank and reward make no appeal to him. Disgrace and shame do not deter him. This is the one that hit me. He is not always looking for right and wrong. Always deciding yes or no. The ancient said, therefore, the man of Tao remains unknown. Perfect virtue produces nothing. No self is true self. And the greatest man is nobody. And when I read that, I just thought, wow, you spend a lot of time deciding right and wrong and yes and no. Even in this, it's still there. So anyway, I think the gift of Zen for me is maybe to let go of that. not in a cop-out way, not in a way that ignores, that's another thing. And this is a conversation I have to have with you, Sarah. A lot of what I've come and brought with this is I've always kind of, and this is very generalistic and simplistic, that Hinduism gets stuck in a lot of illusion, Maya, that the world is illusion, that the world is fake. And, and I've always thought that Zen cuts through that into the crystal clearness of what, and maybe that's what that what is that it cuts through the illusion. Although this morning we were meditating, I have to just share this. I'm sitting here and I just had this awareness of the yin and yang of knowing and not knowing. The yin and yang of just living and knowing and not knowing, the uncertainty, which is uncomfortable for us, but this seems to allow it to be tolerable. And that's a real gift. So thank you, that's enough for me. Thanks, William.